WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The new movie Smoke Signals is being billed as the first theatrical release written, directed, and starring Native Americans. One of the stars is my guest, Gary Farmer. He was born on the Six Nations Reservation in Ontario. When he starred in the 1989 film Powwow Highway, critic Roger Ebert said it was one of the most wholly convincing performances he'd ever seen. Screenwriter and director Jim Jarmusch also admired Farmer's performance and wrote a leading role for him in the film Dead Man, which also starred Johnny Depp. Farmer not only acts, he publishes Aboriginal Voices, the magazine of evolving Native American arts and culture. In the new film Smoke Signals, Farmer plays a middle-aged man living with his wife and son on a reservation. After his wife gives him an ultimatum to stop drinking, he takes off in his pickup truck and never comes back. In this scene from early in the film, he's in the pickup with his son Victor on the 4th of July.
Happy Independence Day, Victor. Feeling independent today? I'm feeling independent. I'm feeling extra magical today, like I could make anything disappear. Houdini with braids, you know? Poof! Wave my hand and poof! The white people are gone. Gone back to where they belong. Poof! London, Paris, Moscow. Poof! 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 Wave my hand and the reservation is gone. The trading post and the post office, the tribal school, and the pine trees, and the drunks, and the Catholics, and the drunk Catholics, poof! And all the little Indian boys named Victor. I'm so good, I make myself disappear. Poof.
A little later in that scene, the son accidentally spills the father's bottle of beer, and the father slugs him across the jaw. Gary Farmer, welcome to Fresh Air. I'm wondering what you think of your character in this movie, someone who is both very aware and very astute, but is often blinded by anger and by alcohol.
Well, you know, it's certainly something I know. I think a lot of people in, you know, the world know about that. And it's... You know, I didn't have to do a lot of research. It was there for me, and it's something I can pull on from, you know, my own experiences.
You mean your experiences watching other people or your personal experiences?
Yeah, my childhood was, you know, my father was, you know, very much like that character.
How did
Only
you...
he didn't leave. He left early. I mean, he passed away young, too young. But, you know, it was something I used and experienced, and you know, something I you know, as an adult, you're still dealing with. So it's you know, it's not. I don't look at it as a negative thing. I learned a lot from from that experience, and it's helped me a lot, I suppose, in this age. But it's certainly something I've lived through.
The first film I saw you in was Dead Man, which was written and directed by Jim Jarmusch. I thought I'd play a scene from that film. I thought you were terrific in it. This is the film where I thought, keep an eye on this guy. Wow. So Dead Man is set in the West, and Johnny Depp plays a young man named William Blake, and he's an innocent who's been wronged every step of the way since coming to a small industrial town named Machine. He's been shot and is falsely accused of murdering the man who shot him. There's a bounty on his head, and he's hiding out in the woods, dying slowly. You play a Native American who finds him there in the woods, and believing that he's the poet William Blake, you decide to help him die a more spiritual death in keeping with Native traditions. But you're in exile among your own people. You call yourself nobody, and in this scene, you explain why.
My blood is mixed. My mother was Umgampe Pakani. My father is Absaluka. This mixture was not respected. As a small boy, I was often left to myself. So I spent many months stalking the elk people to prove I would soon become a good hunter. One day, finally, my elk relatives took pity on me, and a young elk gave his life to me. With only my knife, I took his life. As I was preparing to cut the meat, white men came upon me. They were English soldiers. I cut one with my knife, but they hit me on the head with a rifle. All went black. My spirit seemed to leave me. I was then taken east in a cage. I was taken to Toronto, then Philadelphia, and then to New York.
He goes on to explain in that scene that when he found his way back home, the people of his tribe didn't believe his stories and they called him a liar. So he was left to wander the earth alone. Gary Farmer, do you relate to your character's sense of exile in this movie?
Oh, totally. I mean, in a contemporary sense, I was, I was raised in Niagara Falls in Buffalo, New York, you know, gone to school there. And it was like being exiled from your people. I mean, totally. I mean, I totally related to nobody's experience contemporarily with my own life.
Did you relate to the part of being an exile even among your own people?
Well, I am. I'm not, really. I mean, my people totally accept me and are very warm and loving, and my family's there and, you know, working and living for the last 20 years. But my family, my immediate family, we were away for the first 20 years of my life, off in the outside world. And, our community is very, very much, we have a very strong Orthodox traditional aspect to our community, and it's they're probably more accepting than the community generally, but it's very difficult to they still see me as somewhat of an outsider, because I was born there, but I didn't grow up there.
So you didn't grow up on the reservation?
No, I actually grew up in a urban environment in Niagara Falls, New York, in Buffalo, New York. My father was an operating engineer, grew up with the Industrial Revolution of America. My grandfather dug the hole for Lufkin Alf. You can believe that. That's how far we were taken away from who we were as a people. You know, I just remember as a child dropping my father off at work, and it was just, the sky was yellow from all the chemical companies there in Niagara Falls. Of course, Niagara Falls is a very, very sacred place to my Iroquoian people. There's huge stories there that I'd love to tell sometime.
What were the movies and TV westerns you grew up with that had Native American characters in them, and what impact did those have on you?
Well, I suppose the big one was, The Lone Ranger and Tonto. I mean, Tonto was from my community. I mean, I'm not sure I really understood that as a child, but...
Was he Cayuga?
Actually, Tonto was Mohawk. His name is Smith. Jay Silverheels. That was his kind of Hollywood name. And he was actually a lacrosse player, great lacrosse player, and that's where they discovered him. The game of lacrosse has taken our people out into the world a lot, and that's how they discovered Tonto. So I kind of grew up with him a lot, probably just more than anyone, I think. I can't think of any other films that had any impact on me, except that, you grew up looking at Indians just like everyone else does, you know, in those pictures.
Was Jay Silverheels considered a hero where you grew up because he really made it in Hollywood, or was he considered more of a negative role model because he played in a Western that may have had stereotype characters in them?
No, I think our people accept, they're so accepting. They're so happy to see their faces on TV no matter what they do, even if it's totally a stereotypical role. they're just so accepting and so happy to see someone that they know on screen.
Now, you were telling us that you grew up near Niagara Falls, off of the reservation, and that took you away from your people and traditions. On the other hand, would you have wanted to grow up on the reservation?
Oh, yeah. I would have loved to have grown up with my language. I would have loved to have been... And right from the ground up, go through the ceremonial calendar that my people go through.
How much of that ceremony was being practiced on the reservation when you were young?
Oh, all of it. I mean, certainly not a large aspect of my community, but we do have a very, like I said, the best word, I suppose, is orthodoxed We call it down below. They're the more traditional people in our community, and they carry our culture and have and continue to. It's about maybe 20-30% of our community.
Do you find that the young people who are brought up in that community stay Orthodox, so to speak, or do some of them kind of want to get out and go to the big city and become more assimilated?
I think today you can do both. It's not a problem. I think as long as you understand your language as a base, you can go anywhere in the world and do whatever you want to do or need to do or should do. But once you have that basis of language, because that language is just key to everything, and the songs and the dances, once you got that, you can go anywhere in the world and do anything. You know who you are, you know where you come from, and you know exactly where you're going.
What was it like for you to be living on the reservation after living away from it?
Well, you know, I mean, I truly believed that saved my life. I'm not sure if I would have stayed in America, what would have happened to me. I certainly wouldn't have had the opportunities that I have. Because the world there, it was like, wow. It was that change. Living in America, and especially where I grew up, I mean, I was in Kings, and I grew up in a street, and a street life, and to live on the reserve was great. You know, we had a little gas station, and that was probably the best time with my father, because we changed tires, and we had a little tire shop, and we became friends.
My guest is Gary Farmer. He's now starring in the film Smoke Signals. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Gary Farmer. He's starring in the film Smoke Signals and also co-starred in Powwow Highway and Dead Man. And he publishes the Native American magazine Aboriginal Voices. Now, you came of age during the time of political activism and of political activism, I think, on a lot of reservations as well. It was, you know, the Wounded Knee era, when there were a lot of very militant activities organized as protests by Indians. I'm wondering how that politically active phase affected you.
Not at all. Unfortunately, that was the scary part, actually. I was in college in the States. I went to a small community college, and Genesee Community College. But I was coming directly out of that gang life into, well, the instinctual thing was to be a cop. You know, I certainly, having somewhat of a dysfunctional life, I wanted to help somehow. I knew that. And so I went off to school to be a cop, and then realizing how corrupt that is, I decided, no, that's not for me. And then I fell back on this thing, photography thing, that I did in high school. I had this wonderful little teacher who exposed me to black and white photography. And I went to try to get into Syracuse to get into school of communications, because I really wanted to do films. I wanted to study film, and that had a great school. But I could get education dollars from my community because I was a status Indian in Canada. But I had to study something that I couldn't study in Canada. So I told them, look, I want to be an FBI agent. Right? This is, of course, during 1973, right? And I was totally unaware that Wounded Knee was going down, really. And here I was trying to be an FBI agent, but just simply to get the dollars to go to Syracuse University so I could study something that I couldn't in Canada, because you can't be an FBI agent in Canada.
Oh, so this was like the strings attached to the scholarship you had. If they sent you to the States, you had to study something that you couldn't possibly study in Canada?
That's right. So here I was trying to corrupt money out of the Canadian government to get my education and trying to go into something that was actually, you know, coming down on my own people, you know, and I was somewhat unaware.
So how did you go from wannabe FBI agent to actor?
Well, in the end, it all backfired on me, because I ended up having to go into this kind of social science thing, and I just couldn't get along with chemistry at all. And I ended up coming back. Something brought me back to Canada, because I came back and went to Ryerson and studied filmmaking and photography for a number of years.
What made you realize that you could act? Or that you wanted to?
You know, the last thing, I grew up, you know, always, I'm a fairly big man, and I never thought of myself as an actor at all, ever. And it took me a few years to get over that. But, you know, when I got out of school, the first gig I got was in the theater during the Summer Olympics up in Montreal here in 76. And I did this play called On the Rim of the Curve. It was about the Beothuk people who are in Newfoundland, and they were kind of hunted down like animals up until 1860, actually. And we kind of turned that into a three-ring circus. It was very, almost a satire. And my mother and my family were out in the audience, and I could see that my mother was being totally affected by this play. I could see that she was crying and she was laughing. And I said, wow, this is powerful stuff. And I realized that, God, maybe there's, maybe this is how I can change the world. And I never turned back. And people, you know, were always, you know, I was had a lot of doubts because of my size and my self-esteem was low. And I just kept at it.
Also, it must have been really hard to find roles. I mean, were you only given Native American roles, or did you have the choice of any role that your abilities were suited for?
You know, for the most part, I've done Native American roles, but I've done anything. I mean, I spent the first 10 years of my career exclusively in the theater, and I did everything, all the classics and a lot of Shakespeare and all kinds of stuff. So, I really had a round. And I took a couple years, one year specifically, and really studied hard, especially in clown, which was, you know, that changed my life. And I love clown. I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen classic clown, I suppose. I don't know if you call it classic or not, but I love performing, you know, working with an audience and doing clown. It's just my love, and it's probably the hardest thing I've ever, you know, ever done.
You explained that during the Wounded Knee era, you were studying to become an FBI agent. It was also true that in the 60s and early 70s, being a Native American was considered very hip among a lot of white people. A lot of white people were reading about the Hopi ways and studying Native American religions and spirituality and so on, and trying to adapt what they could to their own lives. And I'm wondering what effect that had on you, the idea that, you know, it was really cool to be Indian.
That is really more prevalent now than it certainly was then. I think for most people outside the community, I mean, the experiment almost worked, the experiment of assimilation that was carried out against indigenous people throughout Americas, even today, was alive and well, and many of our people were, you know, didn't think it was hip at all to be Indian. They were doing their best to be white and, you know, to be part of the mainstream. And so it wasn't necessarily too hip at all. I mean, I grew up as a single Native American person in American schools, and I was the person who was called up to the front of the room and then kind of brought up the Native American section. And then, you know, I had to talk for my people right from the time I was in grade one. I felt alone. And, you know, for a long time, you know, I remember there was a time when I was teased and cajoled so much that I'm not sure that I wanted to be Native American. I think we all went through that period of denying who we were. So it may have been hip with some people, but for us, it was easier to survive not being Native.
Did I understand correctly that when you were in school and you were the only Native in the school, that when the subject was Indians, you were called to the front of the class and had to talk about it?
Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I was pointed out, and, you know, and everyone knew it, and then, you know, everyone treated me like that. I mean, once I was pointed out, I can, you know, with my facial features and my skin color's, you know, dark like a Native, but I can get away being anything, you know, Eastern European or, you know, Hawaiian or, you know, Samoan or anything. I can fit into a lot of cultures, I suppose. And, I think I spent a lot of time trying to disappear.
Has acting helped provide you a way to learn more about your Native traditions, because you do all this research for roles that you play, so you've been able to go to different tribes and learn different languages and study different spiritual rituals?
Oh, of course. I mean, acting, you know, for anyone, I think it teaches you. I mean, acting is a tool. You never stop learning for any actor, whether they're Native American or not. And, of course, most of the roles I'm doing are Native American roles, so I'm certainly learning a lot more about my people and about myself all the time. And it's been great. I mean, it's been a good life.
Well, I wish you the best, and I really want to thank you very much for talking with us.
No, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for your interest.
Gary Farmer is starring in the movie Smoke Signals. Coming up, Ken Tucker reviews Dwight Yoakam's new CD. This is Fresh Air.